Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Room for one more?
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Folks, my name is Lynn, and I'm your host.
I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it's the swinging Talking Twilight Zone.
Aww, hello. Once again, I am thrilled to be here with this great music, and I love that music, Robert, by the way.
Do you recognize that series from 1970?
No.
It was Miracle Center with Chad Everett and Jamie Daly.
Oh, my God, Chad Everett. Oh, yeah, and I used to love that show. Oh, my God. Well, thank you for that. And that's a little trip down memory lane there. And once again, I am thrilled to be here with the best co-hosts in the world, Robert and Dave, and thankfully my wonderful husband Bobby, who's coming to you today from his lavish suite at the Kindred Hospital in Seattle, Washington, and he's been dining on lobster tail and filet mignon, lounging in hot tubs, and of course being entertained by an assortment of strippers and gorgeous dancing girls. Now that the Twilight Zone aspect of that scenario is out of the way, I can honestly say that he's signing on some fairly edible food, getting therapeutic massages every day, and is as comfortable as can be expected in a hospital environment, and the only wish is that the first scenario were true, but he's here, and I'm grateful for that.
So, well, we had to sneak in that microphone because, you know, just to give people out there, you know, the live feeling of actually being in the hospital. So this is what we had recorded.
Yes. Yes. More apparatus, please, nurse. The EEG, the BP monitor, and the AVV.
Yes, sir.
And get the machine that goes bing, and get the most expensive machines in case the administrator comes. Lovely, lovely. Jolly good. That's better. That's much, much better. Yes, more like it.
Still something missing, though.
Patient.
Yes.
Where's the patient?
Hang on, please.
Patient.
Bring it over here.
Find the machine.
Sorry, doctor.
Come along. Hello. Now, don't you worry.
We'll soon have you cured.
Leave it all to us. You'll never know what hit you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Drips up. Injection.
And that's behind the scenes at where Bobby's at.
Boy, Bobby. I'm truly honored. I really am. It shows you how dedicated I am. Just the next time you watch Letterman and Leno, consider what would be happening if they were in the hospital. They wouldn't be on TV. So, thanks to everybody, especially thanks to everybody on our board at our group for the well wishes. I really appreciate that. I told Lynn that I wanted to be part of the show today because Saturdays, nothing really happens in the hospital. Everybody takes off. So if you're going to get sick or die, don't pick the weekend. And so nothing.
That's
what
I had meant for the patient there.
Yeah, I will say this. When I'm taking my regular turn, if all of a sudden they do come in every few hours to take my temperature and my blood pressure. So if I stop talking all of a sudden, it means that they decided to put the thermometer in my mouth rather than somewhere else. So take that under consideration. But other than that, everything is pretty good, and I'm ready to talk about the show. This episode looks a lot different to me from the hospital than it used to, but I'll get to that when it's my turn. So thanks very much, Robert, for all the music.
No problem.
I'm glad we're all back, and I'm glad you're doing okay. And dinner is not for another 2 hours yet, so I shouldn't get too sick until then.
Yeah.
All right, then, take it away.
And if at any point you need me to mute, you just say mute me for a minute or something.
Only when Candy comes in. Okay.
I'm just glad we're back.
We're the best. We're the beautiful. We're the only Ghostbusters.
Yes, we are. We're back. Gotta get some ghosts later on. Did you get that equipment I left there, Bobby, in case any mutant ghosts be coming out of the wall there?
Yes, absolutely.
Proton pack?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
No problem.
Okay, well, today's episode is titled Nothing.
Are you sure? It's not Hospital 101? Yes, folks, I'm back. Hello.
Stop making me laugh. Today's episode is titled Nothing in the Dark. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening.
Are you sure you wanted to? Are you absolutely sure? Okay.
And now, Mr. Serling. An old woman living in a nightmare. An old woman who has fought 1,000 battles with death and always won. Now she's faced with a grim decision, whether or not to open a door. And in some strange and frightening way, she knows that this seemingly ordinary door leads to the Twilight Zone.
Thank you, Rod. Okay. Wow. Dramatic, isn't it?
Very dramatic. Thank you, Robert. And as always, I want to welcome our great and loyal listeners, Felix and Rick. I'm so glad to see both of you here. And Felix, you were on vacation, so I'm glad to see you back. I hope you had a good time. But let's see now. We're talking about Nothing in the Dark. Okay. And this is about a very lonely woman.
Nothing up my sleeve either. But, yeah. I'm sorry, Lynn. Go ahead.
Okay. A very lonely old woman. Her name is Wanda Dunn. And she will not leave her seemingly abandoned dark basement apartment because she's afraid Mr. Death is waiting for her outside. So then all of a sudden she is asleep and hears an altercation outside. So Wanda peeks out the window. You know, she's very fearful. And suddenly a young man falls down the steps and he's lying on the ground at her door. And he's yelling into her as best as he can because he's supposedly shot that he's a police officer. His name is Harold Belden. He's been shot, and he begs her to help him inside before he bleeds to death. And she doesn't want to let him in. She's scared to death. So after much convincing, Wanda finally opens the door, brings him in, and she gains his trust. She talks to him about her fear, and she tells him that she's seen death before in the form of a man and has witnessed him taking away the life of a woman on a bus just by touching her. And she claims she's seen this man who is death over and over again and has been afraid of death ever since. Well, suddenly there's a knock on the door, and a man breaks into her apartment, pushes the door open, knocks Wanda over, and she's knocked out. So when she comes to consciousness, the man apologizes and he explains that he's a building contractor. And her building is supposed to be demolished within the hour. And he tells her that she's been given prior notice, given ample time to move, and if she doesn't leave, he's going to have to call the police to escort her forcibly from the premises. And she protests, and she asks Harold for help, but the contractor can't see Harold. He says, "Who are you talking to?" And she says, "That's a policeman. I'm in over there as a policeman." And, of course, the guy can't see him. And then he leaves, and he says she's got to be out of there. And then Wanda, she looks in the mirror, and she only sees the bed where Harold is lying, but she doesn't see Harold himself. That's when she realizes that Harold is, in fact, Mr. Death, who's come to claim her. So after the contractor leaves, Death, or Belden, explains that he set up this elaborate ruse to get her to trust him so she could understand that death itself is nothing to be scared of. So
and Lynn, I think we got that little section for you right here. If you want me to go ahead and play it.
Oh, do it, yeah. Go for it.
The moment I let you inside, you could have taken me any time. But you were nice. You made me trust you.
But I had to make you understand. Am I really so bad? I really so frightening? You've talked to me? You've confided in me? Have I tried to hurt you? It isn't me you're afraid of. You understand me. What you're afraid of is the unknown. Don't be afraid.
But I am afraid.
The running's over. It's time to rest. Give me your hand.
But I don't want to die.
Trust me.
No. No.
Mother, give me your hand. You see? No shock. No engulfment. No tearing asunder. What you feared would come like an explosion is like a whisper.
Yeah, I want to keep living in that corrupted apartment building. Anything better than that?
Right. And then he says, you know, what you thought was the end is the beginning. You know, and then he points to her bed, you know, and she sees her body lying there dead. And that, I thought that was an excellent scene. I mean, it's a terrific scene. And then, of course, you know, they walk out together. She smiles and she says, you know, and she doesn't say anything, but she realizes that, you know, death is not going to come like, you know, an explosion. It's not going to be painful or anything. She didn't want to die, but she realizes that it's not the worst thing. And they walk hand in hand, you know, through the doorway, up the stairs, outside. And, you know, and of course there was snow on the ground, but there was still also sunlight out there. And if you recall, she said she used to live in the sunlight and everything. So, you know, they, she walks out, and it's almost like from season one, that one for the angels, where, mm-hmm. you know, the guy didn't want to, Lou Bookman, he didn't want to die. And then at the end, he walks off with Mr. Death, and he says, well, I'm going up there, aren't I? And Mr. Death says, yes, up there, you made it. And, you know, it wasn't a terrible thing. It wasn't painful, you know, and I think, you know, a lot of people, they feel that death is going to be a painful, well, for some people it is, but, you know, for her it wasn't, for him it wasn't. But this is absolutely one of my very favorite episodes. I love it. I love it to death. From the very opening scene, you have that eerie, cold feeling, and it looms over the story until the very end. I mean, you know, this is a Twilight Zone, and this is what it's supposed to be about. Eerie, cold, scary, frightening, you know, just that feeling of you know, suspense. And this is what I think this episode conveys. The darkness of the room. The woman is living in absolute squalor. I mean, it was a perfect atmosphere for a chilling Twilight Zone episode, and that is what we get. I mean, you got the woman. She lives in fear of dying, but she reluctantly opens her home and then her heart and soul to this guy. She doesn't know who he is. She learns to trust him. She believes that he really is a wounded policeman. And, you know, she's a very mistrusting woman. And she's sure that death is lurking nearby every moment in the guise of a mortal man just waiting to get into her home, take her from this earth. And no person who approaches her or comes to her door is above suspicion, even if she says, you know, the grocery boy. She leaves the money outside, waits till he goes away, and then she takes in her groceries. You know, but for with Redford, you know, playing Belden, you know, his gentle demeanor, you know, with his desperate, you know, dying plea for help, somehow it worked its magic, and she let him in, and she trusted him. And, but the way...
Hello, carpet cleaner. I don't think she would let him then.
Stanley Steamer.
Uber.
Roto-Rooter.
Len Shark. Candy Graham.
But the way she tells him her story. I mean, I just loved the way she told him her whole story. I mean, it gives the impression, I got the impression that She had been wanting to talk about her fears to someone for a long, long time. And he has this very kind and trusting demeanor, and she felt comfortable opening up to him. She just felt like she could tell him anything. And she describes what her life has been like. And I was mesmerized by her. I mean, I thought Gladys Cooper, I couldn't even see anyone else doing that. I mean, she was just fabulous. And I found myself...
Yeah, she was good. I did enjoy her.
Wasn't she? I mean, really. I was hanging on to her every word, and I felt so sorry for her. I mean, that's just, to me, that is the sign of a true actress. If they can make you feel something intense and make you believe every word they're saying, that is real acting. And Gladys Cooper, she took on this role, and she made it into something very intense and very real. I mean, she was amazing as Wanda. She was terrified, and I felt, and I'm sure most people felt terrified for her. And Robert Redford, he was wonderful as well. I mean, he was kind, he was compassionate. This is back in the beginning before he was really anybody, you know. I mean, he did roles before Twilight Zone, but...
Well, he's no Charlton Heston, but he was okay, wasn't he?
Nobody's Charlton Heston. This was back when he was still a young, you know, a young buck. He's still a young buck, and he was, you know, looking real hot and cool. I mean, not the way he looks now. I mean, you know, I'm still a fine actor.
Yeah, kind of rugged now.
Yeah, well, Facebook's under catcher's mitt now. But basically, back then, he was a gorgeous. I mean, who wouldn't want him in their house and trust him? He's a gorgeous man back then. And he was kind, compassionate, and she trusted him. He was perfect for the role. And now...
And today, your neighbor Bob will be portrayed by Robert Redford. Hey, this is Bob. How you doing? Yeah, I just stopped over. Your wife said she needs some sugar, milk, company.
Well, forgive me for breaking up this party, but I have a question.
Yeah?
I have a question before they wheel me into surgery. On the poll, you gave it a 4, which is what I gave it. You love it so much, what stopped you from giving it a 5?
Robert didn't give it a 4.
Robert, I give it a 3.
You gave it a 4.
Oh, me. I gave it a 4.5.
I don't remember. I saw it all 4.
4.5.
I'm not so sure about that.
Four and a half.
Robert can check.
Yeah.
Well, all right, but even so, what stopped you from giving it? Because when I get to my review, I'm going to explain it, but what stopped you from giving it a 5? Why? What's the problem?
I was just ready to get to that.
Well, I'm going to take the whole day.
He's got important things to do there, don't you, Bobby?
Nurses are waiting for me. I haven't got all night.
I can't tag her to the hospital. No. Okay, you brought up the issue of no visible blood. But I said to you yesterday when you mentioned that, I said, well, when she brought him into her little room there, she did have him wrapped. She did wrap his shoulder. So he's Mr. Death. He can do anything he wants. He could probably made it look like he had blood on him, you know. So that was a little flaw there, I guess, at least one that you saw, and that's true. But also, my other flaw that I saw in this is she said she hadn't been out of the house for many years. But she leaves money in a list for the grocery boy. Okay, well, now, how does she continue to have money after so many years if she never leaves the house? Judging from the destitute condition...
FDR passed the Social Security Act back in
the 1930s. Yeah, but in 1962,
there was no direct deposit. And judging from the destitute condition of her home, now you see she was in squalor, she either has a ton of cash socked away in the house, because she obviously hasn't bought anything new for years.
Yeah, she could be a miser, couldn't she? A miser.
Yeah.
A Fagin-like person with all the money under the bed.
Right, it's under her mattress, right? Under the mattress, because, you know, she has, and we have to really use suspensions of belief here, because she'd have to go to the bank at some point to get money, right? I mean, who, and also, who takes out her trash? You're going to tell me this woman doesn't have trash? I mean, come on. I mean, the woman, you have to use suspensions of belief on this one. I have not been out of the house in years. Okay, you haven't been out of the house in years, so where are you getting the money? Where are you getting all this money?
But that's not all. Even in 1962... The cops carried radios with them. He could have been tracked down. He wasn't out there by himself. He was a real cop, if he'd really been one.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't just go out there and lay in the snow and nobody's looking for him. That's ridiculous. So there are problems with it, but that you can't worry about that, because you can't enjoy an episode if you worry about that kind of death.
No, of course not. That was.
That's what we're here for. We're here to pick it apart.
We're here to pick it apart and really be irritating. And other than that, it is. Well, I'll get to that when I get to my review. So sorry for interrupting.
No, that's
my
all right. No,
my sedative. My sedative is not here yet. Okay.
Better turn up that morphine drip for you there, Bob.
If I'm not making any sense, it's because I'm high on oxycodone. So other than that, you can look it up and see what it's for.
That was the only reason that I gave it a 4.5, because I could not understand how a woman who has not been out of the house in years, as she says, has money for groceries, and you know, you, and plus, you're going to tell me that the woman never gets sick, never needs medical. That was a little weird to me. But other than that,
doctors made house appointments then.
They did.
Yep.
But she doesn't let anyone in. But she doesn't let anyone in. So if she got sick, she wouldn't have let the doctor in. So see, that's the thing. I would have
stethoscope through the door there.
She used to go out, remember, because she tells the story of being on a bus. So it's only recently she stopped going out.
Right, after she saw that woman die, and then she said she started seeing death in other places. She said every time that that someone died, he was there. So she stopped going out. So if it weren't for all of the idea of, if it weren't for the idea of how does this woman never leave her house ever for anything, I would have given it a 5. But I love the episode, and it gets a 4.5 only because of those few little flaws. But, you know, that's really all I have to say about it. You know, she realizes that he's deaf, and she's okay with him, and she's not all that frightened. I mean, you know, that part where he calls her mother, I think that's just basically, I interpreted when he called her mother just a term of endearment and respect due to the difference in their age. He was trying to gain more trust out of her, and, you know, that's what I took from that. But, you know, I'm just going to stick with my 4.5 because I think it's an outstanding episode with just that little flaw of, you know, come on, she has to go out sometimes for something. But she doesn't, apparently, according to her. And now, Robert, let's go to you.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yes, and Bobby, she did give it a 4.5. I'm at the site now.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Her
I'm a little high right now. I don't know. So.
Her and George did, so. Okay, well, I say sorry I missed everybody the last show. I did listen to it, and I wanted to clarify that the comments that I made in the show was before I listened to it, because I wanted to give, you know, my opinion clearly and not from hearing what other people, and I listened to the show after I did my review. But I... tried to get some Quantum Leap ones for you, Dave, but I couldn't get no clear copies because people love to put music on for tributes
yes.
to shows.
No, I find that.
So
really.
That's why I had to explain it. I explained both episodes plus the shock treatment one. So, okay, what's that on this one for this week? Actually, I was kind of okay. I'm not as thrilled with it as Lynn was. I know one of the things that we were talking about, Bobby brought up the question about, was, you know, he a real character? And actually, what I mentioned in my reviews were some stuff that I watched, you know, Meet Joe Black and Dead Like Me, Touched by an Angel. But I did rewatch Meet Joe Black this weekend, and it kind of gave me the theory that maybe the policeman was truly a policeman, and then that Depp was actually using his body. I thought when I watched the episode before Go ahead, Lynn.
That's a good theory. I never thought of that.
Because
that
I don't...
Depp went into his body.
Right, maybe the gunshots and the car driving away and stuff was something that was actually happening in real time. Not necessarily... Well, you know, Depp could do anything he wants, you know. He could have made those sounds in the car, but I took it more for that. Go ahead.
Meet Joe Black.
Yeah, and with the Brad Pitt character, Depp assuming him. So, yeah. So that's the way I looked at this episode when I did my review and then rewatching it for a second time. And believe me, guys, you better have something to drink, a toilet next to you, and something to eat, because it's about almost a 3-hour movie. It's a very long, drawn-out type movie, but I'll bring that clip up later. I do have a clip from that movie. I thought Redford was very good as Death. I do remember the one for the Angels episode, and that kind of adaption of One from the Angels is fitted into The Fugitive, which we'll review later on, with the alien and the little girl, kind of a similar situation with that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you do realize that in both episodes, in One for the Angels and this one, they're both, neither of them want to die. I mean, they're both fearful of death. Well, in this one, Wanda is scared to death of to die. She does not want to die. Period. I don't want to die.
I think she had a phobia. Death can even be a phobia, yeah. Just like germs or whatever, yeah.
Right. And in One for the Angels, it wasn't so much that he was fearful of death. He just wasn't ready. It just came on all of a sudden, like, it's your time. And he's like, well, it's my time. Well, for what? I'm not sick or anything. So it's like that kind of a situation where death comes all of a sudden and you're not ready for it.
Harvey, in Meet Joe Black, didn't people see him when they introduced him?
Yeah, but what we mean is he inhabited a body. So like
right.
Robert Redford as Death could have inhabited a real policeman's body. That's what I think Robert
yeah,
was.
Yeah, but the construction worker didn't see anybody there. If it was a real body, he'd see it.
Good. Sorry, you're quite right.
Unless he phased in and out of reality, too.
True.
Then why take over a body?
Yeah.
Huh? That also brings up the question with Dead Like Us, too, which is another one, or Touched by an Angel. Both of them.
Yeah?
Why did the angel take human form? And she could disappear anytime she wanted to. There was episodes where she protected people and they didn't see her.
Mm.
So,
that's true.
Like I said, it's just a possibility, a theory, and you know, it could be the other way as Rick said too. So, and that's great about this episode. It gets you to wonder, you know, about death, and kind of brought up the similar situation with me last year because I was in the hospital in the same situation with not quite the same thing happening with Bobby as I guess happened with me, but you know, I had 100% blockage in one of my arteries. I was in the hospital for about 3 or 4 days, had to have angioplasty done, and I had a artery that was 100% clogged. And I was, my wife came in there. She was very encouraging to me and didn't worry. She thought I was going to be okay and pull through. And I mean, it's great when you have your loved ones there to support you, and like Lynn with Bobby, you know, being there to, you know, help you get through it. And, you know, I was quite nervous. I mean, after I calmed myself down, went through the procedure, it was about a couple hour procedure because they had put 2 stents in there. And then there was recovery where I had to lay on my back still for so many hours I couldn't move. And then about 2 days later, I got to go home. But, you know, if it was back in the 60s, 70s, they would have cut my chest open and got to the blockage that way. So, you know, technology.
It would have been really scary.
Yep, technology is a wonderful thing now that they can.
Yeah.
They can do that. My uncle had angioplasty too, but they didn't have stents that time. So.
Scary thing.
Yeah, and this is what I said, but you know, this is an episode I wouldn't want to watch that much. Maybe once in a while. It does remind you of mortality. I mean, we're so busy and occupied with what we do in life, we kind of put death on a back seat and don't really think that much about it until you're in that situation. As I mentioned before, I had some other TV shows, movie that we talked about, and since we already talked about Meet Joe Black, I'll go ahead and play that clip. This is
Robert, wait a minute. Before you do that, Felix just wrote, he gives the episode a 4 because he says the idea of death, you know, it scares him. And he says it's too scary to give it a 5, but he gives it a 4. Just wanted to mention that he typed that in the chat room.
Yeah, thank you, Felix. Yeah, I'm on a different page here, so I brought it up and read it there. Well, anyway, this is the confrontation between Anthony Hopkins and death, which, as they talk, transforms into Brad Pitt. So here's that conversation.
Who are you? But it's only recently that your affairs here have piqued my interest. Call it boredom. The natural curiosity of me, the most lasting and significant element in existence, has come to see you.
About what?
I want to have a look around before I take you.
Take me where?
It requires competence, wisdom, experience. All those things they say about you in testimonials, and you're the one.
The one that they want?
Show me around. Be my guide. And in return, you get...
I get what?
Time. Minutes. Days. Weeks. Let's not get encumbered by detail. What matters is that I stay interested. Yes.
Yes, what?
Yes is the answer to your question.
What question?
Oh, Bill. Come on. The question. The question you've been asking yourself with increased regularity. At odd moments, panting through the extra game of handball. When you ran for the plane in Delhi. When you sat up in bed last night and hit the floor in the office this morning. The question that is in the back of your throat. Choking the blood to your brain. Ringing in your ears over and over. As you put it to yourself.
The question.
Yes, Bill. The question. The question.
Am I going to die?
You are.
Yes. When I? Death. You're death.
Yes.
And that was just a couple minutes out of a 2-hour, 52-minute movie. It's like, man. But
I love that film. I think it's great.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think Brad Pitt was a good pick as the body being inhabited by Death. And I loved how in the movie itself, Death didn't have a physical form. And, you know, that scene was from the library at his house, basically Anthony Hopkins' character is celebrating his 65th birthday, and he's a billionaire, and they're going to have like a big extravaganza thing. Well, reality hits him. He has a heart attack, which is weird not going to the hospital when you have one, but still walking around afterwards, and then has the confrontation where I guess Death takes a holiday, they make a deal, and inhabits the shell of Brad Pitt. Man, it was pretty good. It was okay. I think it was overlong to me, but still, that was a nice scene. Another one, Dead Like Me, was a series that ran for a couple of seasons. Mandy Patinkin was in that. Rebecca Gayheart.
Oh, yeah, I like that. I like that.
Yeah. It was a Showtime series. She, Rebecca Gayheart's a real popular actress. She was in Earth 2, and she's been in horror movies and sci-fi, so she's been in a lot of different things. But basically, it focuses on this girl. She goes by George, but I guess it's Georgina, however you want to pronounce her name. Gets hit by an unlikely source. And here is the clip for that.
My name is George Last. I'm 18 years old, and I'm down there, somewhere. We all die, some of us sooner than later. For me, it's going to be much sooner. They say your entire life flashes in front of your eyes the moment before you die. That might be true if you're terminally ill or your parachute doesn't open. But if death sneaks up on you, the only thing you have time to think is, "Gosh."
You little dead girl are going to be a grim reaper.
Huh?
Hundreds and thousands of people die every day. Bodies are easy. Dig a ditch, light a match. But what about the souls? Who takes care of them?
We do. We're bail bondsmen for the disembodied.
See, once their souls ditch the fleshy parts, they're in our custody until they reach their final destination.
I assume you're talking about heaven.
Who knows?
Whatever it is, I hope it's not all gaudy like the Bible.
Well, I like to think it's just like this.
So does this mean there is a God?
What do you think?
Still having trouble with this whole why me issue.
Well, you filled someone's quota. Everyone's assigned an unspecified allotment of souls to collect. Now, you don't know how many until you've nabbed the last one.
Do you remember that weird guy who asked you your name right before you got torpedoed by the toilet seat?
Yeah.
Well, you were his last one, which means he gets a promotion. Nice benefits package. And you take his place.
Personally, I was glad to see him go. He's just a pain in the ass.
Oh, it's like being the millionth customer served, except there's no shopping spree.
Like Rebecca Gayheart.
Like that.
Actually, her name was George because her parents wanted a son.
Right.
I didn't know if she kept that or if she changed it to the feminine pronunciation.
No, they kept it as George. She kept it as George.
And well, it ran a couple of series, and then it did a movie, I think, at the... Did it do a movie at the end of the series? Do you remember?
They did do a movie. Not that I know of.
It was, I think it was towards the end of the series they did a TV movie or something.
They might have stuck two episodes together and called it a movie like they did back then on TV, but I don't remember a movie being made.
Yeah, I don't know if they wrapped it up or not. That's the only problem when, you know, you don't know if you're going to be around or not. Okay, and the final one, Touched by an Angel. But this one really doesn't deal with death. It kind of deals with the Roma Downey character, her indecision, her wanting to feel life to get away from being an angel. Kind of almost like a Highway to Heaven situation.
I just want to say that. That's happened in Highway to Heaven a few times where Michael Landon's character didn't want to be an angel anymore. He fell in love at one point with one of the people he was helping, one of the women he was helping, and he wanted to be human again because he fell in love with this woman that he was helping. Yeah.
He would do the same thing like she would do at the end. She would announce that she's an angel and have the light glow over her. And one of the things about mentioning Touched by an Angel was a... actor that played the Angel of Death, played by John Dry. And it's kind of ironic that after the series ended, he succumbed to a heart attack at age 47 about a year ago in 2011. And it's kind of sad to have someone pass away, especially being that young like that and looking like that. He was in pretty good shape, and you wouldn't think that he would die of a heart attack, especially, you know, just being 47. But the reason why I played the clip was, I mean, even though it doesn't really have anything to do with the Angel of Death, still worth mentioning. Still worth mentioning John Dye as the Angel of Death in the Touched by an Angel series.
Well, God, City of Angels, didn't they, as well, that movie?
Yeah, Nicolas Cage
City
and Meg Ryan.
Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan,
That was tragic.
Yeah.
But
that was.
But here's the here's the clip from this one.
When you walk down the road.
Of course, that's Del Reese singing.
Heavy burden, heavy load. I will rise and I will walk with you. I'll walk with you till the sun don't even shine. Walk with you every time I tell you I'll walk. Believe me, I'll walk with you.
Don't go too far, Ted. It's almost dinner time.
Okay, Mommy.
I know where I am, you know, I do. I know who you are. I know who I am, and perhaps I have lost my way, perhaps. Perhaps my faith has been shaken, but I am still an angel. I am still his.
And where is he?
Where he's always been. He didn't walk away. I did. But I'm going back, and I will find him again.
Where? At Madeline's grave? Year after year, century after century, Monica, you watch the suffering and the sorrow. All you can do is stand by, utter the words that sound more hollow every time you say them. God loves you.
He does.
Why does he allow such suffering?
Because there's free will.
Why is there free will?
Because if there was no free will, there would be no choice to love.
Yes, exactly. You have that choice, too.
And, of course, the guest star for that episode was Mandy Patinkin again. So. But like I said, very much kind of reminded me of the Highway to Heaven situation and what we were talking about there a few minutes ago about that. That
well,
is
Felix
me clips.
Saying,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but...
No, go ahead.
Saying that Robert Redford, he said, would be the last person that he would think of in a role of Mr. Death. And I just put back into the chat room that he is not a face you would associate with death. Now, the other faces, the other people who played Mr. Death in Twilight's episodes, you could see them being that, like Murray Hamilton and One for the Angels, and, you know, all these people that, you know, played the roles, you could see because they're very stone-faced, you know, or the guy, remember, in Escape Clause, the real fat, heavy-set guy in Escape Clause, that, you know, he was like, you know, that kind of guy. You associate them with somebody who played Death, but Robert Redford is not someone you would look at and say he would be the face of a Mr. Death. And Felix was right about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just reading it right now here. Over the years, Death has been played by a lot of different actors, and maybe female actors played Death. I'm not for sure about that. I mean, it seems to be like a male role. I don't know why female Death couldn't be. Go ahead.
Just to say, and then Neil Gaiman, who writes a lot of what's called dark fantasy, and he has done films, of course, he always portrays Death as a woman, the welcoming embrace of a woman.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I was when it gets to me, I'm going to talk about that in a few seconds, but
good. Okay. Steve. Well, let me finish up and I'll pass it on to Bobby so he can. I don't want him to fall asleep through his medicine there. I give it a 3 out of 5.
Thank you very much.
So go ahead, Bobby.
You give it a 3, right?
Yeah.
3.
Yeah.
Okay. All
right. As I always do, I went to IMDb where this episode gets a very favorable reviews. In fact, it gets an 8.3 rating out of 10. And of the 7 people who bothered to post reviews over there, they said pretty much what I've always said about this episode, and that is that it's all about Gladys Cooper. She carries the episode. And this is her first appearance of 3 in the Twilight Zone. She'll be in it again in the next season and in the season after that. And she was a great actress. She had many, many film roles. When she made this episode, she was 74 years old, and she lived about another 9 years. Redford was 25. Today, Redford is older now than she was then when she was in that episode. And he's like 76. And I've always enjoyed the episode, which kind of surprises me because normally I'm not that favorable towards stories that aren't terribly compelling. But she really makes this work, and she makes it work because she's afraid, and she makes us afraid. And all the Twilight Zone episodes that cross that border always are memorable. The same way, if you look back to Time Enough at Last, the reason why it's so memorable and gets such a favorable reaction is because Burgess Meredith convinces you what it would be like if you were the last person on Earth, how scared you would be, and that goes right to your heart, and you really feel it. You feel it here, too. I would put this performance on a par with Agnes Moorehead in The Invaders, where she was also terrified, and after a few minutes, we're terrified too. We don't really know what's going on or whatever that reaction was. These little creatures were taking a shot at us. So that's why it really, really does work, and it's mainly about that. Redford isn't required to do a whole lot except sit there and look pretty, which he does, which he did early in his career. But it's an acceptable performance. Now, there are, like in all Twilight Zone episodes, you need a huge amount of suspension of disbelief to enjoy this episode. And if you pick at it the way I always do about stories, you really won't enjoy it. Aside from the things I mentioned, are many other things, such as what possible good could a woman who's been hiding this long and is barely alive herself do for anybody? He's better off laying out in the snow and hoping to be found, if indeed he was real, than being brought in by her. There's not a damn thing she can do for him. She's barely alive
herself.
She had
no telephone. She had no
telephone. Well, that's what I'm saying. There's not to say, help me, please, you've got the wrong person. You'll probably be better off laying there and hoping that somebody walks by and sees you laying in the snow. So that's really not what the episode is about. It's about fear and a fear of the unknown, and as many Twilight Zone episodes are. So in that respect, I really did enjoy it. And it's a half an hour story. I think if it was in the hour long season, I don't think I would be too favorable for it, because I don't want to hear over and over again about how scared she is. She makes the point that she's terrified and that she literally cannot trust him in any respect. But it's really incredibly far-fetched at any rate. But the people over at IMDb really did enjoy it, and everybody pointed to the same thing, which was simply her acting, not necessarily the story, but the acting alone. And I just think it's exceptional and extraordinary. She was, by the way, if you want to go to IMDb or to Google Images, you can see how pretty she was in her early days. She was a model at one time when she was very young. And she had a remarkable career. And she had a remarkable career after this episode. Huh?
You looked it up because I was going to look up what she looked like when she was younger. Is she really that pretty?
Yeah, well, there's a picture of her on the wiki page.
Compared to what she was as an old lady. She was,
she was younger.
Days, she was a model at one time. You know, she had quite a career, not only up to now, but even after this episode, she worked almost till she died. She continued to work whenever they needed a woman like this. They always called on her. And she had a career for like 9 more years. So that's very impressive. She did not retire. And the irony is she was hardly the type of person that she is in this story. She was very outgoing, and she stayed active right up until the end of her life. So you really have to enjoy it. And, of course, she, like I said, she'll be back in other stories, and she's just as impressive in those two. So I think it's a good episode. It's not particularly scary in any way, and you can almost predict what's going to happen. It's obvious when you're watching the story that no matter what he says, he is really trying to fool her. I mean, I don't think it's a big shock at the end. It was to her, but not to us. It was obvious that he was pulling the fast one, and at some point he would do it. But what I like about it is that it's very gentle. When you come to the end of it, it's not a scary episode where he announces, "I am death, and you're coming with me, like it or not." And that's just the way it is, because I'm in here now, and I can get you. Instead, it's a very gentle way, and he just says to her, you know, you're at the end of your life. It's interesting. It's interesting for me, well, to see this episode this time in a different kind of way than I've always seen it before, because I'm in the hospital. Now, I'm not in here, thankfully, for any life-threatening disease or anything, and I'm just here for therapy and rehabilitation. But when you go in the hospital, it's almost the same kind of thing. People show up at your door, especially doctors, and you really don't want to see them because you don't know what they're going to say, what they're going to say when they come in, what they're going to tell you you've got, what the problems are. Then they take tests, then they got to come in and tell you what the results are, and you really don't know what they're going to be. So that's not a favorite time for me. And when I came in here, I've been here in the hospital between this and another one 10 days now, and when I first got in here, they did to me what they do to a lot of people. My main doctor brought in a bunch of other doctors from other departments that have nothing to do with me. And if you watch TV shows like House and other shows, doctor shows, they have these moments when all the doctors come in and kind of stand around the bed, and the doctor says, "What's wrong with you?" And they're talking, and they're learning about you, and they're taking notes. That's not my favorite part, because you're laying here, and you don't know exactly what's going on. They're taking all these notes, and you're thinking to yourself, "Do I really need to see all these doctors? Do I have all these things wrong with me? What are all these doctors doing here?" So I found that was one part I could have lived without, but it comes and goes quickly. And so I really, although I'm not terrified because I've been in the hospital for this before, I can understand being a little bit scared about not knowing exactly what's going on until you do actually know what's going on. So I do like this episode. I would agree with Robert. It's not the kind, when you think of episodes, to see if I had to sit down and you said to me, you can watch 10 episodes today, name me the ones you want to watch, this wouldn't be in there. I can think of other ones that are more exciting and more, you know, either scary or touching or whatever. But
it's one to watch once in a while. So
yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. When it comes on the marathon, I don't turn it off. I don't go, "God, not that again." I will watch it, but I would not necessarily go out of my way. Now, you said Lynn gave it a 4.5. I think I gave it a 4. I'm not sure about that.
I think you tied her. You gave it 4.5, yeah.
Oh, did I really? Well, that's good.
Yeah, you
well,
did.
The only reason why I cut back a little bit is because it's a little too far-fetched. You know, you overlook things like in Time Enough to Last, because that's kind of like a science fiction story. But this is not a science fiction story. It's just a story about a woman being terrified to let anybody in. So I took out a few points.
You gave it a 4.5, basically the same way I did, because you caught a few little flaws in it, but it wasn't perfect enough to be a 5. But, you know, it was good enough to me to
be a 4.5. I gave it a 4.5, and I'm not going to change my rating just because of the show, but I will do one different. Instead of giving it a 4.5 this afternoon, I'm giving it a 128 over 77, which is what my blood pressure was a couple of hours ago when they took it. And I think that's more appropriate. But for the acting,
with or without the nurse?
For the acting alone, well, my blood pressure may go up a little later. Well, for the acting alone, though, I would give it a 98.8, which was my temperature a couple of hours ago.
I think Gladys Cooper was fabulous. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what she looked like younger, because even in the episode, you know, she does make that reference. She says, you know, I used to live out in the sunlight. People said I was pretty. And I'm assuming she is a very lovely older woman. She has a very lovely face. And
but
there, I think that
there's only one thing
younger,
missing
she
here.
Was a beautiful woman.
There's one thing missing here, and that's because it's just a half an hour episode. It's about 23 minutes. And that is what caused her to suddenly go this way. It was a little progressive kind of thing where she's just getting older and getting more fearful, because if indeed you were happy-go-lucky and you were doing everything, you didn't just get up one morning and say, oh, my God, I'm such and such an age. Now I can't let anybody in. Something happened to her, which was really
well,
very scary.
She does. No, but she does say that. She does say that. She says that at one point she was on a bus and she started thinking,
oh, I realize that.
I mean,
yeah, but
she
got
scared because she was seeing.
I don't know whether that's
people
enough to
dying.
Change your life to that degree.
No.
It just seems like a more slow, progressive
most
thing.
Not people, right?
Yeah.
Well, some
that
people
right.
be older people. They, you know, they don't. They know that's what's going to happen years down the road to them, and they don't want to face that reality. I mean, we're all in denial.
It's an interesting episode because it brings up a fact of life, which is that human beings, because we have no choice, you know you're going to die one day. Of that, there is no doubt. And yet, in spite of that, we don't just sit back and say, well, there's no point in me doing anything. Why should I work, make money, do anything? It's going to come to a bad end. It's all pointless. We put that aside. We just do it. We just say, all right, well, you know, tell me about it later. Right now, I've got things to do. And you live your life, and you go from thing to thing, and you have a career, and you live out your life. You don't sit around and worry about the fact that it's going to come to a bad end, because, frankly, it's going to come to a bad end, and there's no getting around it. She's gone. The trouble with her is that she's let it rule her life. That's all. We could do the same thing. We could hide, too, and say, you know, I'm getting older every day, and I'm not interested in anything anymore. All I know is that I have more time behind me than I have in front of me, and everything is hopeless. Once you give up like that, then you're a hermit, and it's over.
Right.
So I like the episode. I'll stick with my 4.5. I think it's a good one. All right, Lynn.
Okay, I just got cut off out of Skype for a second. Thankfully, I got back in right away before you needed to turn it over to me. So now I'm going to turn it over to Dave.
Hi. A good point. See, I was going to reflect on the Agnes Moorehead episode as well, Bobby. First of all, just remind people, just in case they don't check the forums, this first aired on the 5th of January 1962, Season 3, Episode 81. Bobby said it wasn't a scary episode, but I suppose that depends on your point of view. I mean, if you're scared of death, then you could consider it to be a scary episode because it reminds you of your own mortality. And I think it was Felix that said he could only give it a 4. He couldn't give it a 5 because the topic itself he found scary. What's the famous Woody Allen expression? I'm not scared of dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens.
Yep.
So one of the things that, thanks for playing the Meet Joe Black thing, Robert. I've just been watching Highlander, which has been repeated here in the UK on the Horror Channel of all channels, and I think they're on series 5 or 6 where he's just had a long battle with death itself, but it's called Araman on that. Because, of course, many of these science fiction programs that you call, you'll find that they'll make references to that, you know, death has many different names in many different cultures. You know, the same as the word devil has many names in many different cultures, you know, similar thing. And some people interchange death and the devil almost as the same thing, but obviously they're not. Because if you ever watched Death Becomes Her, you've got to remember that they took that elixir so they wouldn't die. And in a TV series in the UK called Torchwood, there's a character in that who and I'm not talking about Captain Jack, the main character, but one of the other characters who...
the doctor who, in the series, yeah.
No. I'm talking about one of the other characters in the Torchwood group that is actually dead, but he's still moving about and still working. But the point is, when he gets injured, his body doesn't repair, same way as they did in The Death Becomes Her. And you could quickly see the actual fact, and they did this in the Children of Earth, not Children of Earth story, the last Miracle Day Torchwood series, that if people stopped dying, that would be calamitous for the world, because like Bobby said, I mean, millions of people a year, a day, never mind, die. And if you imagine that people didn't die, but they just progressively got more and more disabled and bedridden and whatever, but still had to be, you know, looked after, the world would be an even worse place. So I suppose it is a necessary evil.
Especially what happened with Gwen's dad in that series, too.
Oh, indeed, yeah. Absolutely. It won't say what that was, but yes, I know which scene you mean. It's horrific. Mm-hmm. But as they say from Joe Black, you know, the only sure thing is death and taxes. The other thing I find out, thought about this, although I did enjoy it, I think it was about stretched to its limit. I don't think it could have been shown as a longer episode.
Yeah, it would have made an hour. That was...
Oh, no, late. Never could have been an hour episode.
No, not unless they'd gone... I think they could have done it if they had, like, you know, a throwback scene where you see her as a young woman, or whatever incident it was that had sent her into this recluse mode.
That could have worked.
The other thing that struck me about this was the fact that Mirror came, not central to it, but it was definitely part and parcel, because she only realised she's dead, and she only realises that cop isn't a cop in her room when she looks in the mirror. Reminds me of some of the earlier episodes. We had the Castro one, called The Mirror, series 3, episode 71.
Oh, yeah.
There was the...
Peter Paul.
The $4 room one.
Yep.
Nervous Man in a Four Double Room,
series 2, episode 39. Yeah. And then there was the Big Tall Wish one, series 1, episode 27, with the box who's always looking into the mirror and, you know, remembering his past things. So the mirror has been very useful in many of these episodes. I think that works. That thing that people were talking about earlier about, well, she doesn't have a phone and so on, I don't suppose it really mattered whether she had a phone or not, because if she had had a phone, death could have made it inoperable, or, you know, it could have done something to stall her getting help anyway, because he didn't really want the doctor to keep his pretense up. He had to ask for the doctor, but he didn't actually want the doctor. He wanted time in her room to gain her confidence, her trust, and what have you. I think they made one slight mistake, in as much as she was relating this story about the person on the bus who, when she'd been touched by death, that was when, you know, the release happened and so on. But in actual fact, there's the conversation that they have when she's sitting at the side of the bed, when he touches her hand. I think they should have avoided him touching her up until the whole point where he takes her hand. And it's at that moment that we then transfer quickly to the other side of the room, or via the mirror to the other side of the room, and then you see that she's, you know, she's passed over, as it were. I don't think he should have touched her when they're at the side of the bed, because she'd made a point of saying that the reason she didn't let death in was because she was afraid of the touch of death. So there should have been something to prevent him touching her, I think, until that specific point arose. But yeah, I give it a very solid 4. I mean, the actress's name, Cooper, I mean, what more do you want? I mean, there's acting...
Cooper, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those who don't know, my surname is Cooper, so I just...
Yes, I know it.
I'm thinking about your listeners down the line. Listeners recording. And yes, if you go to the...
No, you're probably related to her. Somewhere down the line, I bet you're related to her.
Yeah, well, she is British, of course. She came from the UK.
I bet you're related to her. You ought to look it up somewhere. I bet somewhere down the line you're related to this woman.
Well, she was born in 1888. My own mother was born in 1912, so that shows you I'm not that far removed from that. So she's only one generation older than my mother. So my grandmothers were born about that time.
Right, and I know there are a lot of Coopers. I mean, Cooper is a common name, but I wouldn't be surprised if you're related to her somewhere along the line. There somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the UK, I mean, if you go back enough generations, sort of nearly everybody can trace their name, their ancestry back to King John or somebody like that, you know, and signing the Magna Carta, if you go far enough back. Anyway, just to go back and to conclude my thing, because I am interested in what Rick Wall wants to say, just to mention that Neil Gaiman thing, they talk about it in the mythological dimensions of Neil Gaiman, how he had this idea of death as a woman, and they talk about anthropomorphized death. In other words, you know, giving a corporeal form to death, in the way that he visits people, or she visits people, in Neil Gaiman's way of doing it. But, a solid 4 from me. Did enjoy it. And if you are going to Rick Wall next, then I'm really interested to find out what he wants to say about it.
Okay, and I just want to, before I go to Rick, I just want to say, I apologize to guest number 7. I did not welcome you earlier, and I do welcome you now. Thank you for tuning in and listening to us all this time, and now we'll turn it over to Rick.
All right. Well, Dave said that I want to talk about the Neil Gaiman death, and that's certainly true. I loved in the first appearance of her, which was Sandman number 8, where a quote-unquote immortal character is waiting to, or actually trying to commit suicide, and her name is Element Lass, and every time she tries to, like, slit her wrists or whatever, she's made of rock or some kind of material that won't cut, and she takes poison and her body assimilates it or whatever, so she can't kill herself. So one panel, she turns around and there's a young woman there wearing an ankh. And she goes, how did you get in here? And she goes, oh, I'm sorry. I must be in the wrong room. You see, somebody upstairs is changing a light bulb on a shaky stepladder. And, I guess I made a mistake. And she goes, wait a minute. What did you just say? And she goes, well, and she tries to get out of the room. And she realizes, oh, you're Death. Sweet, merciful Death. To which Death replies, not sweet. I'm not merciful. I'm me. As I stand here with you, I stand in, oh, God, I forget what European nation she said, where there was a war going on. And I'm also in Africa, where a government wants to move some people out of a village forcibly because they want to build a military base. I'm not sweet.
What
I'm not
show,
merciful.
What show was this, Rick?
It's not a show. It's a comic book, The Sandman,
oh,
by
Sandman.
Neil Gaiman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
I hadn't read that since it was way long time ago.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh.
And it she's a very, seems like a very sweet young, sort of naive, or at least comes off as naive, but I doubt it because she's been around for millions of years. And, like I said, very sweet person. Now,
Rick, was that the same Sandman that was in the Justice League episode in Smallville?
No, this is not this. This is
it's
not
a
the.
Okay.
Yeah, this is not the Golden Age Sandman with the gas mask and all that. This Sandman is Neil Gaiman's Sandman, whose name is Morpheus, and he's king of the Sandman, you know, like puts you to sleep.
Right, yeah.
Makes you dream.
Right. Yeah.
He's one of a family of immortals. Him, Death, oh, God, I forget the other names now. but they were eight.
I didn't mean
them.
To put you on the line there, Rick. Sorry.
But anyway.
You're spoiled.
Now getting to the episode. Yes, she was a very good actress. I didn't mind the story. I, even as trite as it seems, I didn't mind the story. All the things that we've said in there, quite valid criticisms, but I didn't have any problem with them. You know, they to me, they were minor. However, as good as Redford became an actor, or, you know, as good as he got, I don't think he's there yet. I think he was very wooden. Yeah, he was good looking, of course, back then, but I don't think he could quite act yet.
He wasn't in a whole lot of episodes or anything before. I mean, not Twilight Zone, but I mean, he did some stuff before that Twilight Zone episode. He was in a few things, but you're right. He was not, you know, at his peak yet.
Right.
An up-and-coming actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was just getting to where he should be. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to give it a 3.
But you didn't think that he was good as far as you know, coming across as the person that would get, well, how am I trying to say this? As a person that she could trust, coming across as that person that would be the only person that she could trust. You didn't think he was good at that?
He was all right. Like I said, I don't know. I just got the impression that he wasn't really reading his lines, but he really didn't know how to act at that time either.
Okay. All right, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was. He was still pretty green. He was still pretty green at that time.
Around where Paul Newman did HUD and other things like that. He was just getting into stuff like that, too.
But Newman was older, so don't forget.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. Well, I still think that Redford was a good choice for that role. Of course, I'm sure there might have been better people out there, but I think he was okay as far if you wanted to get a guy who was a young guy. Now she wouldn't have trusted him. What is that? Oh, sorry.
You need to mute, Robert. You need to mute.
There's
Bobby.
Your nurse coming, Bobby. You better get rid of that sponge back.
Tell me about it.
I still don't think that, I mean, as far as a person that you would want to get, I don't think she would have trusted an older man.
No.
If you brought, like, the guy who knocked down her door and all, she wouldn't have trusted. But I think as far as wanting to get across a person who would let her open the door. That would make her
open
the door.
Oh, yeah. No, I see what you're saying, and I agree with you, but still, I'm just...
You needed a young, gentle guy that she wouldn't fear, you know?
Right. I'm just saying my overall impression of his acting in the episode is...
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. But I thought he was good in the part. You know, probably could have been played in a number of people, but I thought he was pretty good. And wait, Dave, what are you saying? That Dave says
he's telling us what the Sandman explanation is, which is fascinating.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. But I think Redford was fine in the role. I didn't have a problem with him. Like I said, I think he could have been played by. You know, a few other people, but as far as that particular episode, I thought he did a fine enough job. I mean, he did trust him. If it were me, you know, if I were Gladys Cooper and I was scared to death to let someone into my home, I guess Robert Redford and playing the gentle, kind, sweet character that he was playing, I guess I would let him in and trust him, and she did, and that was, you know, her downfall in a way, but then again, in the end, it wasn't her downfall because she found out that death wasn't as scary as she thought it was going to be. And she
I wanted to mention, too, Armstrong, that appeared as the billing Common Inner telling, you know, the building's going to be destroyed. People remember him. He's been in movies for years, and he appears as Louis Bonderdies in the Friday the 13th series as Uncle Louis, who makes a deal with the devil and gets his soul taken. Yeah.
Yeah, he was cool, too, because, I mean, even he had the compassion. You know, he felt bad. I mean, he said, look, I don't get any pleasure in this. I don't want to.
Yeah, I'm just doing my job. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing my job. And you could understand that. The man had no choice. It wasn't like, you know, that he was going there and saying, I'm throwing you out of your place because I feel like, you know, because I don't like you. I don't want you to be. He was doing the job, and he was trying to be as compassionate. He even stood there. And I can't imagine in this day and age a man standing there and talking to her for as long as he did, explaining to her why he had to do what he was doing. And he stood there, and he tried to make her understand what he had to do. And, you know,
she wasn't young enough to get in front of a bulldozer and lay down in front of it, if anybody gets that hint.
In real life, you wouldn't get that. In real life, a man would come in and say, hey, look, you know, you got to get out of here. I'm not going to stand here and talk to you about life and death and, you know, trees dying and trees growing and, you know, things taking. You wouldn't get that now. A guy would come in and say, hey, you got to go. Get the hell out of here. You know, and I thought that the compassion from him was pretty nice.
Well, I should have played his little speech. He had a good one, and that I quoted in my review where he says, yeah, an old building goes and then a new one's built. You know, he was going to do that little speech.
That was after he knocked her to the floor and probably broke her hip.
That's what they do today, yes. Get up, lady.
He was trying to, you know, he's standing there trying to say, oh, you know, a tree's a tree.
Yeah, an old tree goes down, a new one grows. Yeah,
a new tree grows. An old, you know, so you gotta give that kind of credit. Oh, Dave, you're a stitch. I tell you, you crack me up. But anyway, but yeah, I thought it was a terrific episode. And anything, I think everybody gave it. Did anyone, Robert, now you looked at the reviews. Did anybody give it under a 3?
Yeah, let me bring the site back up. I got it down here. Bobby went ahead and left. He probably had his nurse come in and say hi.
Don't worry, anyway, she's taking good care of him.
One of the strippers came in. And damn strippers.
Now, this is interesting because, Dave, there's a lady on our site that's also from the UK. And
Helen, yeah.
Yeah, Helen. She gave it a 1. So she was not very happy, I guess, with this episode. I don't have the reviews on hand, but yeah. We have a 2.5.
Helen.
We have the Barkin, and myself give it a 3. 4 people give it a 4, and you guys give it a 4.5. George, you and Bobby.
Helen usually is not always, but usually way off. I mean, basically, Helen's usually way off from our reviews, like a long distance call. Remember the one with Billy Mummy and his grandmother? Most of us liked it. I mean, some people, you know, I think the lowest it got was a 2.5 or something. And she gave it a 1.
And you had Helen on one time, didn't you, when she was at the airport? Didn't she call in and do a review with you guys?
She called in from Los Angeles. Yeah, that was basically a waste of time. It really was. It was a waste of time because Bobby insisted on having her on because she was going to be in Las Vegas. And she did not go to Las Vegas to gamble. She went there to see some sites that were related to the Fugitive television series.
Oh, that's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that, but it wasn't related to the Twilight Zone episode. He had her on because we were doing the feed. This was way back, 2009.
Yeah, it's season 1. Yeah, she must have been confused, you know.
Well, he wanted to have her on, and she told me that she wasn't going there to gamble or anything like that. And I said, Bobby, I said, you really want to have her on the show because she's not going there to gamble. And he said, yeah, because she's going to be in Vegas. So when she came on, she had really nothing to say. I mean, I apologize to Helen if she's listening to this, but she really had nothing to say. She did not gamble. She wasn't in the casino. She was there to see something else. So basically, she had nothing to say. And
so she didn't lose nothing. She got out there more than a million other people did. So good for her.
Plus $1. And a lot of the episodes that we like, she hates. A lot of the episodes we hate, she likes. So, you know, Helen is okay because she's across the board. That's okay because, you know, that's what it's all about. Differing
opinions. We appreciate everybody's opinion.
You know? Yeah, yeah. But for that episode, particular episode, I told Bobby, I said, she's not there to gamble, so I don't know why we moved. We changed the, it wasn't supposed to be the fever that week. It was supposed to be another episode. But we moved the episode of the fever ahead because she was going to be in Las Vegas. And I said, I don't think that's a good idea because she's not going to be there to gamble or anything, so you're not going to get anything out of it. And she came on, and she really had very little to say. So we moved the episode really for nothing, but it was okay because she came on. She was very kind. She was very sweet. But, you know, it goes that way sometimes. But,
nobody gave it a 2, 1.5, 0, or 5. So, it's pretty well across the board.
And now our next episode is going to be on the 21st, I believe. Saturday, July 21st, and it's going to be one more pallbearer.
Do my little lurch.
My little lurch, too. My little lurch, too. I think we've all got a little lurch on that, yeah. Little, that's one of those episodes that's like, okay.
It's almost, if you've seen the Burgess Meredith episode, it's almost kind of a repeat when you think about it. Time Enough at Last.
Doctor No. The actor is known for playing Doctor No from James Bond. Joseph Wiseman.
He was good in that movie.
I just saw today that Sean Connery is 81 years old.
Yeah, Sean Connery, he's out playing golf now to celebrate his birthday.
81 years
James
old.
Bond.
Hey, hang on, guys. Can you hang on 1 second? Bobby, I think, is trying to call into me here.
Okay, mute yourself.
I know, seconds awful long.
No, never mind. Never mind, I missed it. But, anyway, Sean Connery is 81 years old. Well, I guess Clint Eastwood is 85 or something.
Wow.
Well, I didn't know you were going to mention that. I thought you mentioned about passing of Andy Griffith, too, which is sad. He was 86.
I know. I was so sad to hear that. I really was very, very sad to hear that. And if you hear the sound in the background, that's Bobby leaving me a message. I apologize. Dear. All right.
And also, we had Ray Bradbury pass away, about 4 weeks ago, something like that? So. Yeah.
Oh,
well,
he did?
Yeah, he did. You didn't know that, Lynn? Wow.
Wait a minute. Did I know that? Wait, I probably did, and I forgot. And I forgot. Oh, goodness.
There's a lot of old people. Yeah. I mean, in the UK, you won't know him. It's called Eric Sykes, a comedian in the UK, 91. I mean, we've got a whole group of people dying, mind you, having said that, they are at least in their 90s. If anybody watches Inspector Morse, one of the actors in that who played Morse's boss, James Grout, he's died just aged 84. So, I mean, death and taxes. We're back to
the death episode.
It's pretty sad. Yeah, well, I was kind of sad to hear about Andy Griffith.
I was just reading... the man from Uncle producer, Norman Felton, died, aged 99.
Yep.
Now I recognize his name. Didn't he do some other series, too, after The Man from Uncle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. You know, it's something because people, you know, it seems like years ago, people, when they died, were much, much older. Then, as time went on, they started dying much, much younger. Now they're starting to die older again.
I suppose that's all the... we went through all that time when a lot of people seemed to be with AIDS and things like that, weren't there? There were quite a few surprise.
Yeah, we lost them in Doctor Who. A lot of the older actors and producers have passed away too. Definitely.
Yes.
Not to bring anybody down on this happy episode of this.
Yeah. Well, I'm really sorry.
Wish you well, Bobby. Wish you well.
Yes, he'll hear it. He'll hear it. He will hear it because he'll listen to the show later. I'm sorry that we lost him. I know he's trying to call me here, but I can't seem to get the...
This has to be a record for this show. I mean, this is, are we like an hour and a half
first
almost?
First one ever from a hospital room, right? Hang on one second, guys. Let me just see if I can get a hold of them. Hold on. Don't go away.
While Lynn's doing that, let's just say the Norman Felton, after Man from Uncle, he produced The 11th Hour, The Lieutenant,
okay,
Strange Report.
I haven't heard many
of these. And in 1973, the legal drama Hawkins, starring Jimmy Stewart, as well as telepics including Ghostbreakers, Marriage Year One, so on. I must admit, not many of those. I'm surprised I don't know of Hawkins with Jimmy Stewart. Perhaps that never made it up to the UK.
Never heard of it.
Okay,
yeah.
I can't get him back, so he'll listen to the show later. And everybody just wish him well.
Wish you well, Bobby.
Best wishes.
Good luck, Bobby.
I put my penny in wishing well for you, Bobby. You better.
He'll hear it later. He'll listen to it later tonight. And thank you so much, everybody, for your good wishes. And I'm hoping he's home very, very soon.
Oh, one thing before we go I wanted to mention was the Twilight Zone marathon that ran. And I think Bobby was going to say something about that, but... One of the things I was going to bring up, we were talking on the board about, yeah, we have a board on the Twilight Zone visit and reviewed. We talked about the 4th of July. They usually do it during the 4th of July or New Year's marathon where they run Twilight Zone episodes. And one of the comments that I made was about them cutting and slicing the episodes up just to get commercials in. And the whole point of it is, you're hurting the newer viewers that are coming on, maybe never seen a Twilight Zone. They haven't seen the uncut version. They don't know what, you know, is going to be cut out or what to expect. I just don't watch when it's on the marathon because, yeah, I mean, it's better than what's out now, but why watch something that's cut up where, you know, I can go on Netflix or I go Amazon or I can go get the DVD and watch the whole thing.
Yeah, you actually can, it costs you $1.99. But for $1.99, you can watch uncut episodes of The Twilight Zone. But I think it's absolutely terrible because when you watch The Hitchhiker, the whole thing is about this woman's fear of the sky. And in the middle of the show, of that episode, she goes into a diner. She talks to the guy in the diner. You know, she's supposedly eating lunch, talks to the manager. Says, do you see any hitchhikers on this road? And he says, no, on this road, not usually. Then she frantically leaves the diner, gets back in her car, goes on the road. She gets into a traffic jam because of construction. The hitchhiker walks up to her car, speaks to her, and she, like, freaks out and says something to him. And says, no, I'm not going that way. And she goes off, and, you know, you see the guy, the construction worker, saying, stop. They cut that whole scene out. And that's...
Oh, I brought up the mask as an example where they cut out the part.
Right.
And it was part of the plot where the guy was sitting in a wheelchair and has the mask taken off, show his face hasn't changed, where the other relatives, their face changed. That was cut out. They went to commercial. They picked up showing the doctor bringing him out and their faces changed, but it didn't show him. So, I mean...
Him. Exactly.
Yeah.
Key vital scenes. I mean, the episode showing the hitchhiker talking to her for the first time, that is a key vital scene because all she does is see him, and then in the middle, he speaks to her. And then, you know, he doesn't speak to her again until the end where he says, going my way. But that scene in the middle is vital, and they cut it out. And it's depressing. It really is.
What's next? I'm timing up at last. We'll cut out the scene where Rod talks while his character, Bemis, takes a walk across the wasteland there just to put a commercial
well,
in?
Well, you know what's it? You know what scene? I can tell you what scene they cut out in that. That's my favorite episode of all. They cut out the scene. Okay, remember when he was in with the bank president?
Right.
It's just that, you know, when I get home, my wife, I pick up a newspaper, and she tears it out of my hand. And it got to a point where I was trying to read the writing on the condiment bottles. And now I can't even use the ketchup. Okay, the next scene shows him where he's sitting in a chair, he's reading a newspaper, she pulls the newspaper out of his hand, he says that they're going to play bridge with their friends that night, and for him to get dressed. So he says, all right, you know, he gets up to get dressed, he pulls his book of poetry out from under the chair, sticks it in his pocket, and he starts to walk out. That whole scene is cut out. After he talks to the bank president, the next thing you see is him walking to the door, and his wife saying, Henry, what have you got there? And he says, got? And she says, what have you got? He says, what do you mean, got? And she pulls the book out of his lapel. And she's, you know, and that's, so they cut out that whole entire scene.
Where the book was marked out, blacked out, where she went through and blacked out the words. And,
They show that part, but they don't show the part where she pulls the paper out of his hand or anything. I'm just so sick of, you know, sci-fi. I really am. I mean, I'd rather watch it than most of the other shit on TV, excuse my language, but, you know, still. You know, it's really aggravating. But anyway, folks, I'm sure Bob's trying to get into me right now. So he's trying to get through. I know he tried on the cell phone. I couldn't get him. So I will let him know that you all wished him well. We'll listen to this again tonight. And we'll see you again on the 21st for one more Paul Bearer. And I hope everybody will be here. And I love you all for being here and for your good wishes. And thank you so much. And have a great weekend.
You're welcome.
Hi, everybody.
Say goodbye. Say goodbye, Gracie.
Goodbye, Gracie.
Okay. See you later, guys. Love you all. Bye-bye.
And on that note, we'll play a little something on the way out here before the outro, so talk to you all next time.
Yes? Is it about the head? Look, I'm awfully sorry.
I am the Grim Reaper.
Who?
The Grim Reaper.
Yes, I see.
I am death.
Yes, well, the thing is, we've got some people from America for dinner tonight.
Who is it, darling?
It's a Mr. Death or something. He's come about the reaping. I don't think we need any at the moment.
Hello. But do leave him hanging around outside, darling. Ask him in.
Darling, I don't think it's quite the moment.
Do come in. Come along in. Come and have a drink. Do. Come on. It's one of the little men from the village. Do come in, please. This is Howard Katzenberg from Philadelphia and his wife, Debbie.
Hello there.
And these are the Portland Smythes, Jeremy and Fiona.
Good evening.
This is Mr. Death. Well, do get Mr. Death a drink, darling.
Yes.
Mr. Death is a reaper.
The Grim Reaper.
Hardly surprising in this weather.
So you're still a reaper out here, do you, Mr. Death?
I am the Grim Reaper.
That's about all he says.
There's your drink, Mr. Death.
Do sit down.
We were just talking about some of the awful problems facing the third...
Would you prefer white? I'm afraid we don't have any beer.
The Stilton's awfully good.
I am not of this world.
Good Lord.
I am death.
Well, isn't that extraordinary? We were just talking about death only 5 minutes ago.
Yes, we were, you know. Whether death is really the end, as my husband Howard here feels, or whether there is, and one so hates to use words like soul or spirit, but
what other words can one use?
Exactly. You do not understand.
Oh, no. Obviously not.
Let me just tell you something, Mr. Death.
You don't.
Just one moment. I'd like to express on behalf of everybody here what a really unique experience this is.
Here, here. Yes, we're so delighted that you dropped in, Mr. Death.
Can I just finish, please?
Mr. Death, is there an afterlife?
Dear, if you could just wait, please, a moment.
Are you
please.
Sure you wouldn't like some sherry?
Angela, I'd like you to say this at this time. If I could, please, really.
Be quiet.
Can I just say this at this time, please?
Silence. I have
rather a gloom over the evening?